This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. We are 2 days away from the NFL draft. The Astros win last night. We got playoff basketball on Wednesday. Things are popping, man. It's a good time to be a Houstonian. Nice to be with you. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. I'm good. Everything was really good yesterday in a lot of regards, other than my...
Which means the Grim Reaper is sitting right around the corner.
Oh, stop.
That's how it's been. That's how it's been, though. Like, one Monday... I know it's Tuesday, but one Monday we come in and, like, that was the greatest weekend in Houston sports history.
Oh, yeah.
And then a week later we come in like, that was the worst day ever. Yeah.
Well, okay. So the Astros now, you got to look, they've won three of their last four. Mm-hmm. If we start with the Padres and the very good team that they are, the Blue Jays, very respectable team. Mm-hmm. But Hunter Brown is just, he's absolutely dominant this year.
Yeah.
He's I don't want to even cross my fingers or anything. It's not like it's flukish or because of bad luck. He's just pitching really, really, really well. And it is fun to watch. And he goes out, I mean, from the first inning yesterday, I mean, how was it, about 8 or 9 pitches it took him to get through the first inning? He's just mowing dudes down. Mm-hmm. His last 24 innings are scoreless.
Yep.
It's the longest scoreless inning streak by a Houston starter since Christian Javier threw 25.
Wow, not that long ago, huh?
Yeah, I mean, in 2022.
For a streak that long. I mean, 24 straight scoreless innings is beast material.
Well, it was a big deal when Javier was doing it, too.
Yeah, I just didn't remember.
He's the fifth Astros pitcher to achieve 24 scoreless innings.
That's kind of my point, which is this team's been around since the early 60s. Yeah. Only 5 teams have done it, but yet it was done 3 years ago, you know?
And yet, I think the thing I'm most excited about, and I think the thing that was the biggest positive development, because we've been watching Hunter Brown do this now all season long. Where's his ERA right now? 1.2?
It's absurd. It's in the low ones. I know that. Yeah. I saw it on Twitter last night. Yeah.
Forrest Whitley closes out the final 2 innings of the game. My God.
How about that?
New glorious stretched out. Older than I think you are, SOB. Good for you, Forrest Whitley.
I choose to look at it in the spirit of Hunter Brown. He's pitched 2 straight scoreless innings, Forrest Whitley. Actually, probably more than that because he pitched a little bit last year. Yeah, so he's right on Hunter Brown's heels with the consecutive scoreless innings. Forrest Whitley.
You know, Forrest Whitley, it's a shame because he's only a year. He might be the same age as Hunter Brown. But because he's a first-round pick, and because a lot of fanfare comes with it, dude, if you try to just reset exactly, you know, how you think about Forrest Whitley, okay, there's a guy that it took a while to come up.
That's a good question, actually.
I think Hunter Brown's 27, is he not? 26.
Is he? Yeah. Well, I know, I'm looking up Forrest Whitley. That's really interesting. Forrest Whitley, oh, come on.
Hunter Brown is 26. Forrest Whitley's 27.
27, yeah.
Hunter Brown turns 27 on August 29th.
Okay. Forrest Whitley turns 28 in September. So there you go.
He's a year older. Forrest Whitley is a year older than Hunter Brown.
First round pick in 2016. The Astros hadn't won a World Series when he was a first round pick.
It was that long ago.
And I know, and because of all the various injuries and drama with his study drug and all of the other things that go with it, if you just don't think of Forrest Whitley as a former Astros high draft round pick. Right. He's a guy that's just coming into his own at the age of 27.
He's
like
just
so many pitchers.
One of these arms coming up from Sugarland. That's all he is.
I know, and the reason I knew Hunter Brown's age off the top of my head, give or take a year, was that I was thinking about him last night. He was just dominating, and as much as people, NFL players, complain about how guys don't, you know, they don't make the same money as Major League Baseball players. Hunter Brown is 26 years old,
mm-hmm.
and as of right now, one of the best pitchers in baseball, and he doesn't get an opportunity to get that big money
for three more years. He came up in the year they won the World Series in 22, so this would be year four. I don't even know. I'd have to go look and see. He hired Scott Boras as his agent. I don't want to think about how many more years he has during this streak. This streak is fun. 24 consecutive innings. Seth, do you know the record for consecutive scoreless innings in Major League Baseball? I knew who held the record. I didn't know what the record was, though. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, I think it was 378 innings in 1859.
It was not Mordecai Three-Finger Brown. No, it was not.
It was back then they actually combined baseball games with those bare-fisted boxing matches that would go 97 rounds because nobody actually wanted to punch each other.
86 consecutive innings and 5 TKOs. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Oral Hershiser. 59 consecutive scoreless innings.
Noted Astros hater.
From late 1988 through, I mean, it was from 1988 into 1989 back in the day. So
What was it, 89?
Late 1988 into 1989. It spanned over two seasons.
How many innings?
59 consecutive scoreless innings. Okay. Yeah, 59 consecutive scoreless innings for old Oral Hershiser. So,
well, going 7 innings last night was a positive development as well. I mean, for a guy that just is so much, you know, because he emulated Verlander for so long, mm-hmm. and I think in kind of his approach and everything else, you look at him, if Hunter Brown can be the kind of guy that just comes in and churns out 7-inning performances and gets the very best out of your bullpen, like Forrest Whitley. Oh, yeah, that was good. That was a fun win last night.
That was fun. Dude, if Fromber gets it straightened out, you got two hammers at the top of the rotation, man. That was, you know, Fromber. And Fromber wasn't terrible on Sunday, but he wasn't great. He hasn't been great in a few starts now. So Astros win last night 7-0. 7 runs! We're burying the lead. They scored 7 runs in a baseball game last night. That was fun to see. D'Amico met with the media yesterday, as did Will Anderson, as did C.J. Stroud. We're going to hear from all of them. I think the thing that got people most excited about C.J. was him talking about this new offense. We'll hear about that in about 15 minutes or so. Here was D'Amico Ryans. This was the one that perked my ears up early on, Seth, in the press conference, on the culture that they've established with this foundation of players.
We have a really solid group of guys who've been here. They understand, right, who I am. They understand my mentality, my approach, and what I expect out of guys. So it's not so much of me, so much of messaging of how we do things or what those guys can carry along the message, right? They can follow CJ, follow Will, follow Jalen, follow, you know, a lot of guys who've done it the right way. They've seen how I've operated for the past 2 years. So coaches, we don't need to be out there. We know we have really good leadership on our team, guys who do it the right way, guys who bring other guys along, and guys who expect to build a winning culture here. And so they just follow those guys. They'll fit in just fine.
They got to win games, obviously. They got to get further in the playoffs than they've gotten the first 2 years. Everybody knows that. D'Amico knows that better than anybody. He has hammered that point home since the season ended back in January. But this is a big sign that they're starting to get this thing in the mold that they want. That it's not D'Amico walking into the weight room or getting the guys up in front of him in a meeting room saying, "Hey, here's what our culture is." He's got the messengers out there for it now, too.
Well, and that, I think that coincides with something that D'Amico said when he was the defensive coordinator in San Francisco. When the Texans hired D'Amico, I went back and watched a bunch of his press conferences from San Francisco, and somebody had asked him about, how do you establish that culture of hard-hitting defense? They were very, very physical as a defense when he was there. And he said, I don't really have to talk about it a lot. We have expectations, and we get the kinds of guys that want to meet those expectations. It actually is very similar to something Kelvin Sampson said on the Astros broadcast
the same
last
thing.
Night.
Yeah.
Kelvin Sampson basically said, I don't have to talk about it a lot. We bring in the kinds of guys that want to play the way I want them to play, and we have high expectations. So it's good to see that D'Amico and Kelvin Sampson are simpatico, which is not a surprise.
No. I think that's a point you and I have been hammering for a while now as the Rockets have gone on this ascension here, you know, Sunday notwithstanding, just the overall ascension where it does feel like Ime Udoka either has guys, they brought in guys like that, and that message has kind of pervaded with the younger guys. I think Sampson's a great example of that. And I think, you know, D'Amico too. You know, again, at the end of the day, it's got to result in a higher level of winning, but it does make me feel good about the direction of everything, you know?
Conspicuously absent in that discussion you just had was Joe Espada. I mean, baseball's a different sport.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's having videos made of a guy who made the team. You know, like I'm not saying the Astros.
I could see D'Amico doing that too, though.
Could you, like a guy? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, for social media, possibly. Possibly. No.
Also, hey, did you notice one conspicuous absence yesterday?
From what?
When CJ mentioned the changes in the offensive line, and he mentioned. Laremy Tunsil and Shaq Mason, but
yeah.
No Kenyon Green. Talked about what good friends he was with the
best friends.
Two.
He said
best friends.
Best friends. Yeah.
Didn't even mention Kenyon.
No.
What the hell, CJ?
No, that's wrong. That's just cold, man. I was excited, dude. We haven't heard. It was weird. We haven't heard from CJ since the end of the season.
Yeah.
Last year at this time, we had 10 podcasts to dig into, and you know, and several other bits of content. This year, it's like, oh, that's right. CJ speaks. I forgot. So we'll hear from him in the next segment. We'll hear from Will Anderson Jr. at the top of the hour. It's draft week, man. 2 days away from the NFL draft, and it feels like the dust is kind of settling now. We're just waiting to see where Shadur goes, waiting to see what the Texans do at 25. So we'll dig into all that today as well. We got a mock draft injection at 7:45 on the show. We got a petty cast at 8:00 on the show today. It's a good Tuesday show we got lined up for you. All right, you can text the show, 713-572-4610. That's the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Text message early here. Move Framber out of the number one slot in the rotation. Get some stress of being the number one guy off his shoulders. Hunter has the mental makeup to thrive as the number one. Here's the thing. I don't think Framber goes out to the mound thinking I'm the number one guy. Like, you're not going to shuffle
matter.
The rotation.
It
now.
Doesn't matter until the playoffs. Yeah. It just, yeah, yeah it's, or it maybe after the All-Star break or what have you. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's largely a moot point.
By the way,
I got into this argument once with a listener about, he was acting like it was the top of the lineup. They're like, no, the number one guy gets more appearances and this, that, the other. I actually had Lance McCullers shut the guy down.
Oh, good.
And, yeah, and that whole dynamic of actually caring in the regular season about who the number one guy in the rotation
was. Look at you bringing in your bully friends to bully this person. I'm going to go get
No, he didn't do it in a jerk
he didn't,
way or
okay.
anything.
I'm going to go get an actual baseball player to shut you down, buddy.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, I just don't think – what are you going to do? Like, have Framber go on 7 days rest next time out so you can bump him behind
Hunter
in the rotation? Yeah, so
we got to be sure we jigger it around. Yeah,
like, you know, and say you're overthinking it, Texter.
No, we appreciate
you being up with us here at 6 a.m.
Jordan batting second yesterday was a change as well.
That was a change,
That's an easier change to make.
Yes, it is. Yep. You can flip that one back nice and easy if you need to. All right, we're off and running on a Tuesday. Good to be with you. CJ Stroud, I think if people are concerned or if people have been upset about how CJ has been kind of integrated into the offense the last couple of years in terms of having some say-so over what it looks like at the line of scrimmage, I think they're going to be excited about some of the things that CJ had to say yesterday. And yes, changes along the offensive line, what Seth was talking about, we will hear that audio as well from CJ on the changes in the offensive line was very interesting yesterday. We will get to that coming up next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Nice to hear from CJ Stroud yesterday. That was cool. Guys are back in the building. Off-season workouts started yesterday. I didn't hear anybody ask Seth if ask D'Amico if it was full attendance for the off-season program.
Right, yeah. They say everybody's saying, I don't know. They talked about how many numbers were out there. I thought he said everybody, but yeah.
I know he's happy with the numbers. That was very obvious. I was curious because, you know, obviously they traded away one of the guys who was a noted, I'll be there when I get there guy.
Yeah, the Laramie Tunsil dynamic. Yes. I think coaches shy away from that, especially because a lot of times it's genuine personal either issues or the obligations or whatever that keep guys from being there.
Fair.
New guys.
Well, and they're not contractually obligated to be there either. You know, it's voluntary.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, they got to be really careful about not looking like they're putting any pressure on it. Vrabel's already in a little bit of a pickle himself
up there
in New England. Yeah, there was – I don't know. Florio made a big deal out of something. I'd have to go back and find it. I think that Vrabel may have done one of those old, like, hey, it's not mandatory, guys, right. But – sure would be swell to have you here, yeah.
People got excited about this yesterday. Here was C.J. Stroud talking about what he's learned so far about Nick Caley's offense.
He comes from L.A. and New England, and, you know, he's going to bring some of that swag over here. So, that kind of is what I'm used to is, you know, taking control and, you know, being a little more pre-snap, you know, having tools to put my guys in the best position. And that's, you know, something that we really didn't work on these last 2 years. But even those principles I learned from and it made me better because it added a new element to my game. So, be able to, you know, just get better and learn from, you know, what he did with, you know, New England and L.A. Would definitely help me because I feel, you know, those are two schemes that I'm, you know, kind of used to in a sense. Like that's kind of what I ran and out of Ohio State, what kind of New Orleans does a little bit, and in LA, you know, it's kind of what we ran here these last 2 years. So I'll be able to, you know, put my swag on it and have fun with it. And, you know, he's all about, you know, me taking full ownership and running the show, and that's what I want. So I'm gonna get what I want, and that's really been really cool just to see that he's like bought into me and he doesn't really know me well yet. So he talked about today having blind trust, and you know, I have a lot of trust in him already. Just how he talks and, you know, how he presents in the room and things like that is really cool to see.
How big a change is that, Seth?
I know a lot of Texans fans got excited as soon as they heard him talking about the pre-snap stuff.
Yeah.
And him being more involved in pass protection, him having a larger catalog to pull from when he wants to audibleize, all of that stuff that you see veteran quarterbacks do. I grew increasingly frustrated with the way things were going last year, where I was trying to give Bobby Slowick the benefit of the doubt in that, all right, he's a young quarterback. You got to be careful with how much responsibility you give a young quarterback because you want to try to hammer everything down and make it so you don't have to think that hard about it. You can just go out and do it. But, I mean, Bobby Slowick himself had said that they don't spend a lot of time or work a lot on pre-snap identification of blitzes, pre-snap looks, and how that might affect how you audibleize the quarterback, setting the protections, all of that higher level stuff. That with CJ going into his third year, that's exactly when a lot of quarterbacks really start taking on a lot of that responsibility. And I think CJ's wired for it. He had the ability to audibleize, but in the old school, okay, we're checking from pass to a predetermined run, or I'm going to switch the run from left to right, whatever it might be. I think he's going to have a lot more authority to do more before the snap. And I think CJ's 100% capable of doing all that. The other part, when he mentioned the similarities to the offenses, I think you know, at Ohio State, they run a lot of option routes where a wide receiver is going to adjust his route based on the coverages. That's something that New England, when Belichick and Brady were there, were big on. So I think that's something CJ's already got a lot of experience with that they can elevate to a new level.
Is this something, CJ being able to have more control at the line of scrimmage? We're going to talk about the offensive line in a second. Is this one of those little things on the margin where it actually helps the offensive line too, if CJ
yes.
has that level of control?
Like, oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Well, because especially when it comes to identifying blitz before the snap,
right?
That, you know, the center is making his call based on his rules, and the O-line at times last year, they were just kind of locked into a formation that the defense, the smarter defense, knew that, like, the defense dictated that protection. Like, they would line up in such a way that they knew what pass protection the Texans were going to call, and then they would blitz to exploit that pass protection. And there was nothing anybody can do about it at times. I know there were times where people got mad at Dalton Schultz because there was a free edge rusher off the edge. Some of those instances, they were in a full turn protection where Dalton really couldn't do anything mm-hmm. about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, they were bad or overly simplified protections at times that, yes, ideally with a smart quarterback that can, you know, that can stop the process, reset the protection, all of that, that alone makes it easier for the offensive line.
Yeah, I feel like the Texans' moves on the offensive line, some of it I think is cultural in the offensive line room as to why they made those moves, but I don't think they're a more talented offensive line today, and I don't know if they're going to be more talented once the first 2 days of the draft are over. But I think it feels like there's a lot of trust that the process and the coaching is going to be a lot better this time around, you know?
It's interesting because with the old Kubiak-Shanahan philosophy, which has changed, you know, and got different people run it differently, but I always felt like it was the best way to get the absolute most mm-hmm. out of an average quarterback mm-hmm. or an above-average quarterback, like Matt Schaub. Mm-hmm. You know, they got the absolute most out of Schaub.
Yep.
But when it comes to actually unlocking that top tier potential in the modern NFL, it put too many handcuffs on the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think with CJ, just he's got the intellectual ability to do that higher level stuff. You're putting handcuffs on him if you don't allow him to really dictate terms of the defense at times.
Yeah, that's exciting.
It's kind of like it's paint by numbers in a lot of regards.
Yes.
If you don't give that quarterback, you take an average or above average quarterback and you say, just here, paint by numbers and everything will work out and we'll get an acceptable performance out of you. But you can't tell Rembrandt to
paint
by numbers.
No, you drafted Picasso. What are we doing here? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I like
that's
that.
That's why you end up in, that's why Picasso cut his ear off.
That's right.
Because his football coach was overly structured.
That was Van Gogh. Unless Picasso cut his ear off, too.
Picasso did it, too.
I can't believe I'm well actually
you. I've got a book coming out.
I can't believe I'm well actually you on French artists. all right, let's get to the O-line, because you alluded to it.
Are they both French?
I don't know. They're French names. Picasso might be Italian. I don't know. Over there on the other side of the pond.
One of them's Spanish. I don't know.
So CJ said some interesting things about the offensive line yesterday. We're going to play both of these back to back. This was CJ on the changes to the O-line.
Yeah, you know, it's exciting, you know. It's something that I've learned as Lee. You don't ever get comfortable, you know, just you got to be able to adapt and change and upgrade, you know, like every year the iPhone upgrades, you know, you got to be able to upgrade like that. So that's something that I think that we'll do. Personally, you know, for me, myself, that's a goal of mine, is to get better in things that I need to get better in, also, you know, polish those things that I'm good at. But yeah, it's exciting having new guys, you know, different, everybody's different. So new personalities, new mindsets, you know, and just really, having one common goal and the same goals, I think at the end of the day is what creates that winning, program and that winning tenacity that we're all looking for.
So. Okay, so that was on the changes in general. So there's a good follow-up to this. Were you surprised by the changes to the offensive line?
I mean, that's something I feel, you know, is not my pay grade. You know, it's just I'm just a quarterback. But at the same time, you know, it's, you build relationships with guys, and, you know, your LT, of course, who I know you're talking about, and Shaq, you know, those are two of my best friends. So that I've come into the league with. So, yeah, it hurts, you know what I mean? And you know, our front office knows that, and they know how I felt about it. But I totally understand, and I'm not against it at all. I totally think that we're heading to the right side of things. And, you know, I think something I learned about Nick is that he has a plan. No matter what happens, he always has something up his sleeve. So, of course, sometimes we don't know what that is. But you just have that trust, and that's something that we actually talked about today, having blind trust and, you know, having earned trust. And for Nick, I mean, he's gained my trust in both areas. So I'm excited, but, you know, I'm always going to be best friends with those guys and rooting them on. And, you know, I still talk to them daily. So
what about Kenyon?
Kenyon's throwing his drink at the radio.
Look, this is one of those things where, okay, that's CJ said what he was supposed to say. But I do appreciate that in instances like this, if your quarterback is pulling the side eye emoji on Twitter or something, if you're doing some of those things that make a potentially controversial situation even more controversial.
Seth, a rap lyric, perhaps.
Yeah. Cryptic rap lyric, whatever it might be.
Can I interest you in some future, yeah.
Thank God he's not doing that. But right. I do, on the truthometer, I do think that CJ has been in the league long enough now, and he understands and knows that the GM is going to make some decisions either because of financial reasons or guys get old or whatever it might be, and you can't sit there and try to be an armchair GM, at least until you've won a couple Super Bowls.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, be LeBron after you've done all of that stuff or whatever, and then we can have huge – it'd be great for sports radio. But for now, it is just you gotta do your job. And he understands that that's part of it. And the whole thing about, I would imagine what Nick said to CJ about it was some of what they said to Laremy Tunsil, which is, hey, you know, we've got the salary cap. We've got guys. We've got you to pay.
We gotta pay you. Yeah, exactly.
And Will Anderson and these other guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, that alone is really justification enough. Now, having said all that, it is most teams figure out a way to pay their left tackle if they really like their left tackle.
Sure, sure.
That's the last. It's one of the last guys that you allow to walk before a star wide receiver, before a defensive lineman. You don't let your star left tackle walk. But there is at least justification for it. But and the other side of it, though, too, is I think a conversation about how, hey, we know it wasn't just the offensive line. We know that it was. We fired the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You have a different offensive line coach. We'd like to keep improving. Everybody on the offense is a part of pass protection, including the quarterback, including the tight ends, including how threatening and menacing are your wide receivers to take some of the pressure off the offensive line, that it's never just one guy. It's the sum total, and that's the pitch you give CJ.
It's one of the most interesting answers CJ's given in a press conference, in my opinion, because it does show to a degree what kind of teammate he is, that there's an implication here that he's sad to see both of those guys. I think he's sad to see both of them go personally. There's even an implication in here that he was sad to see them go professionally. He says, they know how I felt. Then he proceeds to say, I'm not against it. So it doesn't feel like he's like, gung-ho about the whole thing.
Right.
And yet these were the guys that almost got him killed last year, you know?
Well, not Laremy, but yeah.
Not Laremy, but Laremy's the leader of that group,
well,
you know.
Yeah, no, and honestly, that's
Laremy
where
didn't
I think,
block well, well no. in a run game that might not have got him killed, you
well,
know?
You know, but especially, though, that's where I think some people are a little too quick to give Laremy a pass because he's a good pass protector.
Right.
You have to remember, when you're false starting or when you're not run blocking, then you're contributing to those second and tens and third and tens, which put more pressure on inadequate offensive linemen. It's, hey, his PFF pass protection grade is... His is going to be good whether it's second and five or second and 20.
Yes.
His pass protection grade is intact, but it makes it a lot harder on the rest of the offensive line when you don't give a damn about staying on sides or actual run blocking.
Well, and I think, too, if I'm a Texan fan, that, and especially knowing C.J. Stroud's agent is David Mulligetta, and maybe I'm making too much out of this, but to hear him say at the end there how much he trusts the front office, is good for – I think Texan fans liked hearing that because we know – how it fell apart with Deshaun. And I think, look, at the end of the day, it falling apart with Deshaun was the greatest thing that ever happened to this franchise, because it's why it's a big part of why you're here now with Will Anderson and C.J. Stroud. But that was a rough period to get to this point, and you don't want to go through that again. I think C.J. talking about, I think he's being genuine too, where he says that there's a trust, blind trust and earned trust, and Nick has both with him. You know, I thought that was a good cut right there.
Yeah, the blind trust. I'm going to be a good soldier. It's not yours to question why it is yours to do.
Above his pay grade. He said it himself at the beginning of that cut.
But then there is an earned trust over time where, like, generally they've done some good things since CJ. Since Nick and CJ and D'Amico and Will have all been there.
Yeah. No question. The pay grade thing is funny to me because I think CJ already makes more than Nick makes. The pay grade part. CJ's already making like nearly $10 million a year. You know,
that's above my pay grade. As if there's some athlete out there other than LeBron who is actually getting paid to be both the GM and a player.
Exactly. Yeah. Text message.
That's where he should put that into his. That's what Mulligetta should negotiate. Listen, well, we got this cap we have to worry about, but what if we also pay CJ to be an assistant GM?
The first ever QB assistant GM in the history of the NFL. Text message, Jim Adler, Texas Hammer text line. CJ is so mature at this point, and I love that for the Texans. Yeah, he is. And I think the fact that this is the first time we've heard from him this offseason is an indicator of that as well. Like, he's having the exact offseason that I think once the postseason was over, that we were all, like, I think most people were kind of wishing, like, I hope he just kind of goes into hiding and does his work, in, you know, kind of in the shadows, you know?
There was one soundbite that wasn't necessarily that interesting. I don't know if we're going to play it, but where he alluded to just the approach in the offseason. And that is, your first three offseasons in the NFL, they are all very specifically different, where your first offseason, you're getting drafted and it's a whirlwind and you have pro days, you have the draft, you have the combine, you have mini camps for the first time, and you're just, it's as busy as you've ever been because you just finished the football season and you're right into all that. And you don't know what the hell's going on. Your second offseason, it's the first time in your life that you've ever had this much free time. Mm-hmm. You don't have school. You don't have any organized football or anything for a large chunk of time. And even when you do, it's just the mornings and then you got the afternoon to yourself. You got a whole bunch of cash sitting in your bank account. And it's kind of, it's overwhelming. And it's kind of a shock, even if you know it's coming.
Yeah.
So that third year is the first time that you really feel like, okay, I can look back at how I handled last offseason. I can tweak things. I can operate a little bit differently. Maybe have a little bit more structure.
Yeah.
I've learned how to say no, perhaps, to people who try to guilt me into things.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the first time you feel like a genuine
You're
pro.
You're adulting.
In your third offseason.
You're
yeah.
adulting in your third offseason, yeah. All right.
I remember my second offseason, I had a game station or whatever I had, whatever video game I had.
Yeah.
I took it to Goodwill like 2 weeks into it.
I can't have
Because I just been sitting around
fat.
Playing video.
Yeah.
I had nothing but time. I was alone in my apartment.
Yep.
I was rehabbing an injury, so there were very few guys in town. And I'm like, what am I turning into? Yeah.
All right, let's get to headlines. Astros win. Rockets are another. Next game is tomorrow night. We'll talk about that a little bit, and we'll hear a little bit more from D'Amico Ryans. And headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Headlines for this morning. The Astros win last night. 7-0. Oh, I know. They're on a roll. One in a row.
They won three of their last four versus quality opponents.
That's true.
Hey, they were going one. They were going win-loss, win-loss, win-loss for a long time.
Yeah.
So winning three out of four. And yet also, where it was a win-win for Brandy last night because George Springer is her favorite baseball player of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And George Springer in the second inning got on base and then stole second and then stole third.
Mm-hmm.
So what ended up being seven shutout innings for Hunter Brown was threatened most menacingly by George Springer. And yet ultimately this was a non-contest because Hunter Brown was so dominant.
Yeah.
Gossman, the pitcher for the Blue Jays, was dominant for a while. And then the fifth inning happened.
Till he wasn't. Hunter Brown, that is the story of this game, is Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown, seven shutout innings. He's pitched 24 consecutive scoreless innings. I haven't been watching the American League at large this year. I have a hard time believing there is a pitcher out there pitching better than Hunter Brown is right now. Here's Joe Espada last night on Hunter Brown's performance.
Oh, man. Not so price. Was that like, he's like 20-plus inning scoreless right now. He's on a roll. He's confident, dominant. You know, he goes after these guys. You know, he's got the stuff. He's got the demeanor. How quickly he's turned around from last year, how it started, and where he is now. It's been incredible to watch.
It's a message for Red Sox fans. If you meet the Astros in the postseason, and Hunter Brown is the reason why you get knocked out, you can thank your third baseman for that.
Mm.
Alex Bregman was the catalyst for Hunter Brown getting turned around last year when he told him to what? Start using his sinker more, Seth? Is that what it was?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Or
yeah.
Introduce a sinker at all.
At all. Yeah. 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 Use it more than zero. Yes. Yeah.
One of the coolest graphics, and I meant to screenshot it, but at the beginning of the game, they showed his various pitches versus right-handed batters.
Mm-hmm.
And the one was a 0.0 ERA or batting average versus against, I think that was a four-seamer. Like so many of them were so ridiculously good.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're at that point in the year where there's several guys with a like a 1.2 or lower ERA.
Sure,
but Hunter,
sure.
Yeah, Hunter Brown's got a 1.16 ERA right now.
It's been awesome, man. It's been so, so cool to see. And especially Espada makes a great point there. This time last year, he had an ERA that was in the double digits. You know, he had a 10-plus ERA this time a year ago. It's crazy to think the massive turnaround that Hunter Brown has had. Astros back at it tonight at Minute Maid Park. They'll try to win two in a row. Four of their last five is what they're going for tonight. Rockets off last night, off tonight. They'll be back at it. Game two of their series with the Golden State Warriors on Wednesday this week. Cooper Flagg announced he's going to the NBA. No big surprise. But we found out yesterday that the Phoenix pick that the Rockets have will definitely be, if it doesn't jump up in the lottery into the top four, will be, in all likelihood, the ninth pick in the draft. So they've got a 3.8% chance of landing Cooper Flagg, Seth. A good sporting chance. 3.8% to land Cooper
Flagg. They're still at a 14% chance for a top four pick.
Okay.
Which ultimately, I'm not holding my breath for Cooper Flagg.
No.
I think there's a better likelihood that Kevin Durant is on this team next year than Cooper Flagg.
Definitely. I would say definitely that.
And yet, the Rockets have done a really good job of getting the cold envelope in there in recent years.
Oh,
it's really
year.
one of the best things Rafael Stone does is get in the cold envelope in there and having success in the lottery.
That's it. Yeah, Reed Sheppard. They were not supposed to have the third overall pick last year. They got it with Reed Sheppard. CJ Stroud actually explained. There were a few people on the text page a little upset that CJ was canoodling with Steph Curry after the game on Sunday night. Here was CJ explaining his interact. This is yesterday. CJ Stroud explaining. He's actually got a history with Steph Curry.
Yeah, my heart sunk. Like, I was like, dang, like, because it's crazy because I met Steph before my rookie season, before the draft. I met him at a restaurant in L.A., and I talked to him for, like, over an hour. He was just giving me game and just really, like pouring into me as probably a vet did him. And, for him to take out their time, it meant a lot. You know, I was actually, me and my brother actually went to a game seven when they played the Clippers. I think it was his first time, like, doing this. And I remember I told him that. He was like, bro, it's just, for him, it was cool, I think, for him to hear that, too, that, like, you know, people just, you know, are in awe of what he does. But for him to even, like, recognize me or, you know, just to show love was amazing. And it's crazy to just see in person how good he is, you know, just, it's another person, you know, that takes with the talent that God has gave him and you know, is really developed that through training and through skill development and things like that and working on his body. I didn't know he was that, like, he swole. So, like, just how he takes care of his body, like, all those things that I can tell, you know, he's, you know, in the back end of his career, but he's playing as best as he ever has. So, it was just dope to kind of just, you know, talk to him after the game. For him to, like, he ran by me and, you know, was, like, talking. But it was just dope. And I think, you know, I'm definitely trying to get back in the building for sure.
There's a part of CJ that I love when famous people recognize him, he still is flabbergasted by that.
Yeah, he was amazed that Matt Stafford knew who he was.
Yes, knew who he was.
Even somebody within football.
After his rookie year that Matt Stafford knew who he was.
He said that. He was like, it was cool that he knew who I was.
and then he actually
knew stuff about me.
Right.
It was
crazy. It's so funny to me.
Yeah, it's refreshing, I think. He would go on to gush about the various Rockets players and also voice his confidence that, you know, he brought up, hey, that playoff environment is different. I learned that last year. The crowd is just different. Everything's a little bit different. The graphics and the painting on the field
the
is different.
The lighting in the stadium is different, he said. Yeah.
Which I don't use that as much of an excuse for Jalen Green, because Jalen Green has played against his heroes before, and Jalen Green's been around. But no, it is different in the playoffs, yes. And the Rockets fans did a great job. There was an energy in that building.
No doubt.
But I don't quite... make an excuse for him in that regard.
Nope.
CJ was making excuses for Jalen Green, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Fred VanVleet awed by the playoffs? Was that his, moment? You know what? I gotta take CJ to task for this take.
Oh, are you?
All right. You know what, CJ? Okay. No. Higher expectations. Okay.
I'm here for it. Last one here. This is the Texans started their offseason program yesterday. That's why we heard from CJ Stroud. We're going to hear from Will Anderson in the next segment. This was D'Amico Ryan's message to the team on the first day of the offseason.
Being that it is our first day of OTAs, we get excited as coaches to have players back in the building. But it's also limited. We can't actually get on the field with the guys. A lot of people would like to, but it's just meetings with our guys. They go out. They work with our strength and conditioning coaches, working in the weight room and also on the field, doing some conditioning. But it's just it's such an energy lifter having everyone back in the building. Just feel the buzz. It's been quiet around here for a while. Kicked the rodeo out, so we're good to go. But it's been quiet for a while around our building, so to have the guys back and them to impact our building, you feel the joy, you feel the connection, new guys, old faces, everybody just coming together. It's a 2025 Texans. That's what's exciting, to see how this team will come together, and today is just the beginning of that.
All right, so we'll dig into that in the next segment with Will Anderson Jr. Will Anderson met with the media yesterday. The question that we'll lead right off with, have you moved on from the playoff loss to Kansas City? There's a Texan player who has not moved on from it. It's probably Will Anderson. We'll hear from him on that. And some of his new teammates on defense will do all of that coming up next here on Payne and Pendergast on a Tuesday. Good to have you with us here on a Tuesday. We'll do that next. Will Anderson.